That's all right, we'll get one out of the way. Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. We do not have a quorum yet, nor does it seem like we have any staff, but I think we'll go ahead and start hearing Senate File 576, and Senator Betzold is ready to go.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and no members. thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 586 is a rather simple bill. As you're aware, we currently allow a preference for it's permissible in law to allow a preference for expanding the game and fish lottery and drawing preferences for service members. It is discretionary to the commissioner. What this bill would do would be to add two more categories because right now it applies to qualified service members or veterans. Basically, we've had 24 months in active service to the United States Armed Forces. This would apply to anybody who's got a Purple Heart Medal by qualifying service. Also to individuals who have a disability rating of 70% or more as defined by the United States Veterans Service Administration. As I say, there are those two components, adding those two categories and changing it from the discretionary to actually required on page 119. Mr. Chair, you and I had discussed this bill, and you had raised some questions about tracking it through some database and so forth, and I'm not quite sure because I haven't heard from anybody as to any issues or problems in doing this, but obviously your committee would have a better handle on any logistical issues than I do. But that, in essence, Mr. Chair, is the bill.
So, and this is moving forward in the House?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Okay, so presumably they've had some discussions on mechanics over there as well. If there are concerns, the DNR can talk to us about them, but I haven't heard any as yet, and it seems to have gone through the process in the House as well.
Yep, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding it was heard in the House, it was laid over. Apparently, Representative Dill intends to include it in the omnibus bill, but that's the information I had.
Does this have to go to any other committees, or can we lay this over for inclusion in our hands?
Mr. Chair, I think this is entirely within your jurisdiction. I don't believe it needs to go anywhere else.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? If not, we'll lay over Senate File 576 for inclusion in the omnibus game and fish bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll see if Senator Rest is across the hall, and if she is, I'll send her over.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
So we'll have to move on to finance. So.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, as it occurs to me, this is Senate File 1956. I do have the A1 amendment, and I don't know if we can. We can actually vote on the A1 amendment.
Yeah, we're going to have a tough time voting until we have a quorum, but if you'd like to explain it.
All right. Mr. Chair, members, very simply what Senate File 1956 seeks to accomplish is to direct the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency to seek grants that are available through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for the purpose of reducing diesel pollution for transit vehicles, and if they're successful at gaining some of those grants, then making them available to transit agencies across the state for the purpose of purchasing buses that would be less polluting. It comes from an initiative, in which several hundred million dollars from three different categories that kind of support this purpose have been appropriated through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that will be available to states on a competitive basis. So they're not coming to the states on a formula basis, so folks would have to put together a grant proposal. Thank you very much. And if successful, potentially could bring significant resources that then we would want to make available to transit agencies around the state to buy hybrid or less polluting buses.
So this is just authorization language?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Very permissive?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Just one thing on line 14. Is there something that we can say instead of is successful, just grammatically? The application for federal funding is granted or something like that?
Something more lawyerly?
Yeah.
More statutory?
We'll think about that.
So Mr. Knopf or Ms. Doyle.
Okay. Is there anyone who wants to testify? Do you have any witnesses?
No, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone who wants to testify against Senate File 1956? If not, we will temporarily lay this over, and when we have a quorum, we'll adopt the A1.
And in meantime,
and then what committee does this have to go to?
To Finance, to
okay.
Senator Anderson.
Then we'll pass it to Finance after that.
And Mr. Knopf or Ms. Doyle will think of a more lawyerly
yep.
word.
Yep.
For successful.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I thought I saw Senator Sharon. Sarah Fulby is here.
Yeah.
All right. Should we take your 1804?
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay.
We'll just grab it when we take up.
Okay. Oh, they're coming tonight? Okay. This is the back page entirely for tonight?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. All right.
Which
package? Send those
to you. Oh. What? Oh, my.
Is yours copied on the back? What?
Some,
are you looking for?
Oh, never mind. Maybe. Maybe I just got a back copy. Never mind.
I'll have some look at
She doesn't have a back page to go to.
Thank you.
Sorry. James, I'm giving you one of the originals to make copies from. At least somebody else has got the back page.
Exactly. Oh, fine. Yeah.
While we're waiting for more members and authors to show up, maybe I can just, for the purposes of the public, give an idea of the process for the next couple days. We're having a lot of conflict between our committee's meeting time and session, and so we're going to be starting and stopping periodically. Please plan on an evening meeting. The Senate DFL caucus will be caucusing at 5:30, probably for about an hour, so we'll meet after that. And so there will certainly be an evening meeting tonight. And then we are anticipating the final passage of our game and fish bill will probably be needed to be done tomorrow. We were planning on tomorrow morning. However, we're informed that session will be convening tomorrow morning. So it could be in, we could go into the afternoon. So it's a little fluid, but I just recommend that the public and members keep in close contact with our office. We will try and send out emails, but just keep in close contact with the office as to when exactly we'll be meeting, given session schedule. So Senator Rest, Senate File 747. Do we have a quorum yet?
No.
Still waiting for a quorum, Senator Rest.
That's 30%.
Yeah. Quorum is now present. Senator Rest, if you wouldn't mind, we have to take a couple votes on the previous bill.
Sure.
On Senate File 1956, Senator Dibble will move the A1. It was an author's amendment. All those in.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf had a suggestion for changing the wording on lines 13 and 14.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think to simplify it, what you would do is on line 1.13, delete agencies, and 1.14, delete application 4, and then insert agency receives, and then delete as required and delete comma is successful. So it would read, the grant program in this section shall be implemented only if the agency receives federal funding under subdivision 3. I think it'll simplify it.
Okay. Does that make sense with your intent?
Yep.
All right. You want to just incorporate that change?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. So on the A1, as amended, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And then Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 1956 as amended. Be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Sorry about that. Everyone understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Okay. Senate File 747. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 747, I believe you have the first engrossment, deals with the issues that were raised by non-conforming shoreland lots, and they have been before the legislature any number of times in the last couple of years as we were trying to balance out environmental issues and also the local government issues, and in particular trying to be sensitive to landowners who were trying to have common sense plans for the use of their shoreland lots. When the bill was introduced on February 16th, I did not have high hopes for any resolution of those issues. However, the interested parties have met. The local governments, Mr. Lacasmo is here from DNR. The realtors had issues. Homeowner organizations and representatives had issues. And we feel that even though the bill is not perfect, as probably no bill ever is, that the concerns have been addressed to the reasonable satisfaction of the interested parties. They were working on the issues even during the interim, but had not yet come to a resolution by the introduction of the bill. Just briefly, the bill in Section 1 clarifies that damage to nonconforming property is measured by the market value as indicated in the county records, and that if a nonconforming structure is in a shoreland district with less than 50% of the required setback from the water, when it's rebuilt after it's damaged, the setback has to be increased if it is practicable. And there was a lot of discussion about what word to use in that section, and that was the one that seemed to make the most sense to everyone. So not just whether it was possible, but whether it was actually practicable, and not just practical, but a higher standard, a lesser standard than possible, a higher standard than just practical. Section 2 provides that shoreland lots of record on the date of adoption of local shoreland controls for lots that do not meet lot size or width requirements, that the county has to regulate the use of those nonconforming lots by permitting buildings on a single nonconforming lot without a variance from lot size requirement if they meet certain conditions, and the conditions are intended to protect the water resource. Paragraph C permits an individual conforming lot that is part of a group of two or more lots that are adjacent to one another and under common ownership to be treated as a separate parcel for the purpose of solar development, again, if certain conditions are met, which are being responsive to protection of the water. Paragraph D requires a lot that's subject to that previous set of conditions that does not meet those conditions to be combined, nevertheless, allows them to be combined with one or more contiguous lots so that they equal one or more conforming lots. So there's flexibility in the bill for how a parcel is able to be either taken on its own and or combined with others to make to come up with a conforming use. Also, in paragraph E, contiguous non-conforming lots that are under a common ownership can be sold or purchased individually if each lot has a habitable residence on it at the time that the lots came under that common ownership and the lots have adequate sewage treatment or are either septics or connected to a public sewer. Paragraph F requires a property owner to address conservation and water protection measures as part of the request for a variance zoning or permit. And then the last paragraph clarifies that a portion of a conforming lot may be separated. Now it's the other way around. Rather than combining, it can be separated from an existing parcel as long as the remainder is conforming and the newly created parcel is combined with an adjacent parcel. So there, I believe, the bill now has maximum flexibility, but it still is paying attention to the environmental concerns with regard to protection of the water. It balances the issues between the concerns of local governments in terms of issuing permits and also the conditions under which they may be issued, and I believe that it resolves almost all of the horror stories that we heard, at least in our committee, on homeowners who were not able to sell a piece of land that had a house on it, or if something got damaged, they really couldn't replace it. If it was on a non-conforming lot, et cetera. Mr. Lacismo is here to add further testimony and or answer any questions you may have.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Kent Lacismo, the Director of the Division of Waters for DNR. And Senator Rest did a good job of explaining what's contained in this bill. We did work over the interim with the cities, counties, and townships, and the realtors and builders to forge a bill that could meet most of our concerns. There was an issue initially in our draft with the realtors. We've resolved that. They've agreed to add a disclosure statement in the disclosure statement that they now use. They're going to add something relating specifically to shoreland lot size. So we've resolved those issues. The builders did have an issue with Section 1, but I believe that we've addressed that with the change in language from the original draft and the language that now, as Senator Rest said, is the increase of setback if practicable. We aren't saying that something can't be rebuilt. It's just if we can increase the setback, we should be doing that. The difference between this bill and last year's bill is in this bill that we actually have standards and we require that that the sale of adjacent lots or the sale of lots that each have structures on have septic systems that work. And we haven't rewritten the septic standards. Those standards are PCA's regulation in their rule 7080. So we're just saying that a parcel would have to comply with those standards. One of the big changes that we made, just so the committee understands, that paragraph C, when we're talking about a group of two or more contiguous nonconforming lots, the existing standard would be that you would have to meet 100% of that lot width and area. As we've written this bill, you now have to meet 66% of that standard. So that would make more lots developable, but it's only those lots that can meet the septic standards. So on balance, I believe that this bill does balance property rights interests, environmental protection. And as Senator Russ said, there were a number of examples provided during the interim of issues. And this bill solves 9 of 10 of those that were specifically brought to our attention during the interim. And I don't believe we can write a bill that solves all of the problems, but this does solve the majority that were brought to our attention. And I stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Additional witnesses, Senator Rest?
Beg pardon?
Do you have additional witnesses?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So Section 1 deals with more than contiguous lots. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Section 1 is dealing with nonconformities in all classes of property, although the changes that we put in on lines 1.23 on are the changes that are just dealing with nonconformities in the Shoreland District. And that only deals with those structures that are at less than 50% of the required setback.
I'm just trying to think of a situation. Let's say that I've got a cabin that is less than 50% of the current setback because it's been grandfathered in. Yet I've done a lot to address impervious surfaces. I have vegetative buffers. Restored even a wetland maybe. And then someone comes in, commits arson on my cabin. They set my cabin on fire. And it's a crime. Is it fair that I should have to set back my rebuilt cabin any amount because of that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we've addressed that issue in with the language that you consider moving it back if it's practicable. And that's a decision that would be made between the local government and the landowner.
I'm not asking about the practicality issue. I'm talking about the fairness issue. Why should I have to set it back at all to no fault of my own? And maybe there's a forest fire. Why should I have to set it back at all?
Mr. Chairman.
Particularly if I'm already maybe doing some of these shoreland protections on my waters, on my shoreland. Couldn't you just, instead of the, you know, requiring a setback, couldn't you just use some of this language on page 3 that you have here that I really like, you know, requiring the address of all of these issues? But, I mean, to have a triggering event that may be of no fault of my own, why should I have to set back?
Mr. Chairman, the underlying premise with the nonconformity language was from, I believe, 1974 through 2004. There was language that required you to meet all of those standards, period. And only since 2004 to today was there the language that allows you to rebuild a nonconformity if you don't expand it. So we did have 30 years of language that dealt with the premise that it would be desirable to get rid of nonconformities over time. Okay. And so since 2004, we've had this other standard, and what we provided in this bill is a global look at this and looking at increasing those setbacks of those nonconformities if it's practicable. Our initial draft required a structure that was damaged, that was within that shore impact zone or half of the required setback, to be moved back and rebuilt. It was an absolute, and that's been removed. And what now it is it's a consideration of by local government to balance the benefits of moving it back with the conditions of the site.
Okay. Further questions? If not, Senator Saxon.
Well, I was just going to say, if there's no further questions, Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate File 747.
Is there any additional testimony from the public?
Mr. Chairman, the bill, if it's acted favorably upon, it needs to go to the Judiciary Committee.
Okay. Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, when I was reading through the bill, I see there are several places where we refer to Minnesota Rules Chapter 7080. Mm-hmm. I think it is customary.
It's the PCA rules.
Right. I believe it's a more standard form is just to refer to rules of the Pollution Control Agency in case they would rewrite the rules and put a different chapter number on them. So I would propose that where it says Minnesota Rules Chapter 780 to just delete that and say Rules of the Pollution Control Agency.
Mr. Chairman, I would consider that an improvement because if they change the number, then we have to come back and change this provision.
Mr. Knopf, do you have that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In fact, some of these rules have already changed just recently. Okay. Some of them are 781 and 782. Okay. 782.
So, would you like to move that?
Mr. Chairman, I would move to on page 2, line 16 and line 25, and on page 3, line 1, and on page 4, line 17 and 26, and on line page 5, line 1, delete Minnesota Rules Chapter 7080 and insert Rules of the Pollution Control Agency.
Everybody understand that? On the Fredrickson Amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. On the Saxhog motion, Senator Saxhog moves that Senate File 747, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Judiciary. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Senator
Rest. Senator Saxhog, are you ready to go?
Absolutely.
Whichever bill you'd like to take first is fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we'd like to deal with Senate File 1698 first.
Okay. Go ahead.
Senate File 1698 is a bill relating to water rulemaking, and I do have an A2 amendment.
Pass that out. Author's amendment. It's a delete all.
It is, Mr. Chair.
All right. So on the A2, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm now going to have Lisa Furnett from the Minnesota Builders Association briefly go over the bill included as amended and help answer any questions that the committee might have.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Lisa Furnett with the Builders Association of Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon. I'll make this as brief as possible since you have a long agenda today. This bill was developed due to a concern over several entities, including the Builders Association of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chamber, counties, cities, townships, et cetera. There's more people that are involved who are concerned with all the different water-making rules that are currently, or the water-making rule projects that are currently in the pipeline in the different agencies right now. You should have something in your packets that talks about current rulemaking agency projects. There are 15 of them, 10 in the PCA, 2 in the Board of Water and Soil Resources, 2 in the Department of Natural Resources, and 1 with the EQB. a lot of these different water quality rulemaking projects overlap with each other, and we're all trying to kind of figure out how we're going to, you know, figure everything out, what the cohesiveness is, and why they're not working together on each of these. So we thought originally what we'd like to do, which the original bill was, do a 2-year moratorium on all the water making rule projects, and then move forward with some sort of study to kind of discuss the different issues that are out there. We, as you'll note, we've taken out the portion on the environment, the environmental water quality moratoria. What this bill does is it asks a group of people that are represented by the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Health, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Pollution Control Agency, EQB, and the Department of Natural Resources, to get together with other entities, including scientists that have technical expertise in this area, to consider scientific data currently available on TMDLs, stormwater, and wetland loss with relationship to agency rulemaking, to identify current rules and what the goals of the rules are, and more importantly, have these regulatory goals been achieved to their fullest extent. We'd also like to identify what is more effective, a watershed-based approach or a local government approach. I'd also like to find out why some program. Wait, I'm going to back up again. Identify what is more effective, a watershed-based approach or a state agency-administered approach to the programs and rules. And then why some rules are left to the state level and why some are left to the local level, along with identifying the real and perceived barriers to the reduction or the redundancy of the programs and rules between the state and federal regulations. The final outcome will be a report back to the legislature so we can get, again, some sort of clarity as to what's happening on water quality rulemaking so everybody understands what they need to do.
Okay. Been talking about this issue since the beginning of session. It seems like something needs to be done.
Mr. Chair, I thought you were going to say from the beginning of time.
Yeah, right. It seems like there's got to be a way that we can streamline the process but maintain or even increase our water quality standards. I think there's interest in both. We need to figure out how to do that. And this jives with some of the consolidation discussion we've been having in other hearings of this committee as well. Senator Sieben, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did. Mr. Chair, I was wondering to Senator Saxhog or the testifier, why require the Department of Administration to do this study and not the DNR in consultation with the Department of Administration?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, we had originally actually had the Clean Water Legacy Council appoint everything. The House, on the other hand, had decided that they'd like to have the Department of Administration do it, so we were just keeping the bill cohesive.
And
admin is kind of a neutral entity that often facilitates these types of discussions, as opposed to having one particular entity that would be affected by this study facilitated as well. Admin has facilitators for these types of meetings, and we've used them before in other committees.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, and also Department of Administration, like the chairman was speaking, doesn't deal with water quality rulemaking. So, they're a more neutral entity.
Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say if the facilitation is the issue, as I understand it, I think we had testimony in, trying to remember what committee it was in now, that the facilitators from that used to be in the Department of Administration are now in the Office of Management and Budget.
Okay.
And so this wouldn't necessarily pick up. I mean, the Department of Administration is supposed to do the study. They could still contract with the Office of Management and Budget for those facilitators. Yeah. But this is basically given the duty on the Commissioner of Administration.
Senator Sieben?
Another question is, what is your intention with other interested parties? Or was there any discussion about who the other interested parties would be in the House? Would this be a study where the Commissioner of Administration would conduct some sort of stakeholder process and have public meetings where all of the named entities would send representatives and then other interested parties, including members of the public, could come and participate? Or what's the vision for how the study would be conducted?
Is there a way to flesh this out so there's a little more assurance of equal balance between industry and environmental interests?
Mr. Chair, Senator Siebert, there is definitely a way that we could flesh this out. I think in many other bills, when things go through and they talk about studies and work groups, everybody gets an opportunity to come forward and say they'd like to be part of it. So other interested parties would be environmentalists or some of the environmental agencies or groups.
But, Mr. Chair, I don't think you answered my question, ma'am. So it is your intention to include those parties, for instance, environmental groups? Do you want to make an amendment to add that now, Senator Saxog, or are you saying that you are going to change it at a different time in another committee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Siebert, the problem with putting the groups down specifically is that I don't know that we don't have a kind of a never-ending list. But if you're more comfortable with that, we could think about that. But simply saying stakeholders, I think, would what does it actually say on
that? And I presume that if they want a credible report, it will include all stakeholders. But you know, we can certainly find a way to wordsmith it so to provide that insurance so that it's a balanced process.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, when we talk interested parties, we're certainly talking about environmental groups, mm-hmm. but we're probably also talking about the Chamber of Commerce and the Builders Association, mm-hmm. you know, which aren't really listed in there either. So.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, I was just trying to get a better sense of what you meant by other interested parties or what the process would be, but so I'd hope you continue to work on that.
Well, I think anybody interested in water quality generally would be certainly included.
Mr. Chair, it would also seem that someone from the League of Cities or the other units of government would need to be involved too. I wasn't just thinking of environmentalists.
Senator Kilash?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this seems really similar to Senator Mary Olson's bill to consolidate the water resources, and it's not necessarily identical, but it kind of overlaps. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that we need to do another board on top of that, or if there's some other way of doing it. I'm not sure what the status of her bill is either, so maybe you could enlighten me on that.
Senator Saxon?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Kilash. I think that Senator Olson's bill deals with specifically with the agencies and bringing those agencies together and try to decide how they can all be put together. Whereas this, the theme is water. The theme is putting agencies together. The theme is water. So I think it comes at that particular situation from a different angle.
There are some differences and there's some overlap.
Senator Sachs, I think you're right. It's just that while they're in the process of figuring out how they redo it, they have to look at each agency's rules and regulations and stuff in the process to see what fits and what doesn't. It just seems like a natural fit somehow or other. And what I'm afraid of, I guess, or what I'm concerned about, is having two studies going on at the same time when really they may be part of one solution.
I've brought this up to these folks before, that there's got to be some way to make sure they don't cross streams, and I think something can probably be figured out. Senator Scogin, did you have a question?
I did, but Senator Saxon answered it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So where does this bill have to go next?
Mr. Chair, I think that Senate File 1690 is passed. It should be laid on the table and for possible inclusion.
In what?
Where is it?
Mr. Chairman?
Is the agenda sheet?
We could, what we could do.
We just want to lay it over.
Okay, we could lay it over, and then we could also consider it if the committee approves, we could consider it as for an amendment onto the environment policy bill, which is in finance now. Sounds like it's a finance issue anyway. We could send it to finance as well. Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 26, I move to delete current efforts to eliminate. And on line 27, delete everything after relations. And on line 28, delete everything before the semicolon.
So it would read what?
So it would read, identify redundancy between state and federal regulations.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we have different, or we have redundant, what might be returned, might be thought of as redundancy between state and federal law regulations, because we want to set standards in Minnesota for our waters as we think they should be. And they may coincide with the federal regulations, but just because the federal regulations change doesn't mean that we may want to change them in Minnesota. For example, a federal regulation might make perfect sense in Kansas, Missouri, and the central part of the United States where they don't have a lot of water, but they don't make much sense in Minnesota where we have a lot of water in the state. And I think it's fine that they would identify the redundancies, but I think it should be the legislature that decides whether or not we want to change those regulations.
Okay. Senator Saxog or Ms. Frenette?
No, that's just fine.
Okay. On the Fredrickson Amendment, everyone understand it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Did anyone
Mr.
else?
Chair, excuse me. Go ahead.
Did anyone else have their hand up? Did anyone want to testify against Senate File 1698? So do you want to send it to Finance?
Another shot at this, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1698 be passed on and sent to Finance.
Okay, so Senator Saxog moves that Senate File 1698, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Everyone understand the motion? Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You want to take up your other bill?
I don't know.
I heard Dibble talking
about it. Mr. Chair, members, we're dealing with Senate File 1773.
Yep.
And I have an A1 amendment.
Right.
The A1 amendment. That I would like to move.
Is it passed out already, or we have to look more?
This is authors delete all. On the A1, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 1773 is a bill that relates to county waste management reporting requirements. With me today is Dave Benke, Director of Prevention and Assistance Division within the MPCA, to give brief testimony and help answer any questions the committee might have.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Benke. I'm with the Pollution Control Agency. The amendment you have before you now in bill form proposes to do two things. If you'll recall, the SCORE reporting requirements, or the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment reporting, results from the counties receiving funding from the state and then reporting on what they've done with those fundings in regards to recycling and reduction activities. The reporting requirements are on an annual basis, and as one of the ways that we've discussed with the counties to reduce the burdens on the reporting was to kind of look at it in this way. The first thing is to, for 1 year, reduce the scope of the reporting to satisfy the intentions in the legislation and not go beyond that. And while that's being reduced, focus the attention in the second part in creating a dialogue amongst the counties, the Pollution Control Agency, the Solid Waste Administrators, and the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board to have a discussion on how those burdens of reporting could be reduced, at the same time maintaining consistency across the counties of the data so that it's reported accurately in the best way it can. The state relies on the data to do a lot of decision-making in addition to assuring that the counties have satisfied the requirements of the reporting. With that, I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Not seeing any questions. Do you have any other witnesses, Senator Saxon?
Unless you might want to hear from the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Annalie Garlitz, and I work with the Association of Minnesota Counties as well as the Solid Waste Administrators Association. And over the past few years, I've been talking with them about their recycling reports that they do, and something that has come up again and again is that they would like to see a little bit more consistency going on when they're doing the recycling reports. We've heard from some different people that we'd like to see increases in recycling rates and kind of wanting to know where counties are at. And as we've been having those discussions, I've been hearing that we might not be comparing apples to apples when we're looking at the SCORE report. So we're hoping that what everybody sitting down and getting together and looking at this will do is, one, to help us streamline and help counties save some time and money when we're doing the reports, and also trying to collect the best data that's comparable throughout the state as we go forward. So that's the summary of why we want this, and I'll take any questions if anyone has any.
The AMC in one of its reports had recommended that we look at or try and examine how we could get a producer-based recycling system in Minnesota. Is that correct? Is that accurate?
It is correct, Mr. Chair.
Does this report, or could this report relate to that in some way and offer an avenue to further examine that suggestion that the counties have made?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not certain if this report would be the right place for that, but I do know that PCA is already kind of undergoing some product stewardship initiatives, and maybe Mr. Benke could explain that. And I don't know, I thought there was another bill that may or may not have been introduced about that, but product stewardship is something that AMC certainly reports. And part of this report, we do report about paints, which everyone has seen the paint product stewardship bill that's come before them, and another bill which you just voted on was the e-waste, which is also a product stewardship initiatives that counties have been behind.
Would it greatly expand the scope of this report if we included in here somewhere to examine producer-based recycling?
That, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have not done a SCORE report myself. I've been relying on my technical experts in the counties. I'm not certain what all that would entail as part of this, and maybe PCA could help me.
Mr. Benke?
Mr. Chair, members, currently the Pollution Control Agency is involved in a stakeholder process with solid waste stakeholders across the state to look at how the solid waste system is affecting greenhouse gas production and how that might be reduced. That recommendation was in our solid waste policy report, and a report will be coming back to the legislature on that. I believe in that the recommendations on recycling as well as source reduction, composting, waste energy, and land disposal is going to be looked at, and so recommendations will probably be part of that.
Producer-based recycling.
Mr. Chair, I will bring that up with the stakeholder group as we look at that right now. And not specifically do we have a recommendation that I know of coming towards that, but I think the dialogue and discussion is covering the whole system.
Well, maybe you could ask the SCORE experts if they think that producer-based recycling discussion would be appropriate for this report, and we could get, you know, we can start examining that suggestion that the counties have made.
I will do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay. Further discussion on Senate File 1773.
Mr. Chairman, just one, I think, technical on 1.9. Since this is uncodified, it says the commissioner, it implies the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency, but I think after commissioner, just insert of the Pollution Control Agency before the comma on 1.9.
Okay. Just clarifies that.
So I'm moved, Mr. Chair.
On the Saxog amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure from Mr. Behnke's perspective, this is not going to cost anything for the PCA to do this.
Mr. Behnke.
Mr. Chair, Senator, when we took a look at this initially, this is one of the things that we have a dialogue with the counties on ongoing and didn't feel that it would add an additional burden to us.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it would need to go to finance.
Okay. All right. Senator Saxog, then we'll move that Senate file 1773 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
Either the floor, Mr. Chair, or for inclusion in the Omnibus Environment Policy Committee. Okay.
Why don't we send it to the floor so we have an official vote that this is recommended by the committee.
Okay.
And then since the Omnibus Environment Bill is awaiting action in the Finance Committee, we can certainly consider amending this to that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
So moved.
Everyone understand the motion? Seeing no further discussion, did I ask if anyone wanted to testify against this bill? If anyone would like to, they can approach now. Not seeing anyone approaching. On the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Saxog. Is Senator Coring here? Please approach. Senate File 1203.
I'll just make sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and what an honor to be before this committee twice in 1 year. I've got to tell you, this is quite an honor. Mr. Chairman and committee members, this bill, actually, Mr. Chairman, I have an A1 amendment.
It's being passed out.
If you want me to explain the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Is this the first time the bill is being heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then it will be considered an author's amendment.
Okay.
Senator Olson, would you like to move the A1? On the A1, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What this bill actually started out as is had a constituent come to me, and her son is a trucker. And back when the gas price and the diesel price was extremely high, and as you know, when you pull into a truck stop, all these trucks are literally idling all night long. And the constituent asked if I would introduce a bill on a grant program, and the money come from the state general fund that truckers could apply to put on these
auxiliary power unit,
Mr. Chairman and members, on the truck so that it would reduce the amount of diesel fuel that would have to be burned. And so I introduced this bill, and Mr. Chairman, I never asked for a hearing on it because with the budget constraints that we're under, I just felt that it probably wouldn't go anywhere. Then we found out that there's money available from the federal government, actually somewhere around $1 million that can be applied for by the state of Minnesota, the Pollution Control Agency, and it has to be applied for by the end of the month, it's my understanding. And so that's what this amendment does, is just change it. We're not asking for any money from the state of Minnesota. We're asking that the department, it's my understanding that they were not going to apply for this money, and what we're actually just asking them to apply for this $1 million money, and then if we get it, we would provide the grants if we got the money. And I think that's kind of what it is. I have Amber Backus here from the Minnesota Truckers Association. I guess maybe she could weigh in and help explain this a little more.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trucking Association, a statewide trade association representing all sizes and segments of the trucking industry. We do appreciate Senator Coring's desire to renew our push for a state grant program so that truckers can help the environment. With the large budget deficit the state is facing, this is an initiative we had given up on, but we are grateful that Senator Coring would like to pursue federal dollars available through the stimulus package to make this program viable in Minnesota. And I should mention at this time, I do have a handout if committee members are interested, but there are actually three different pots of money that came through the economic stimulus package that could provide funding for this program through the diesel engine reduction or diesel emissions reduction administration. And those different pots of money are the National Clean Diesel Funding Program, which has $156 million, which we could bid on for that $1 million, as well as the Smartway Technology Program that has about $30 million that we could apply for that fund through that fund as well. So there are a couple different opportunities here that we hope will work. Today, trucks in Minnesota consume over 70 million gallons of diesel while idling, which annually contributes to production of 9.5 million tons of CO2 nationally. And these auxiliary power units can lower per truck carbon dioxide emissions by as much as 80%. During the past decade, the trucking industry has made tremendous strides in reducing emissions. The days of black smoke coming out of diesel exhaust stacks are fast disappearing. In fact, since 1994, the industry has reduced particulate matter emissions by an astounding 90%, while reducing nitrous oxide emissions by an equally impressive 50%. And this has been accomplished by the introduction of a series of new engines. Each new engine, while cleaner for the environment, is more costly. And the models that have been available through 2007, less fuel efficient, which runs counter to the idea of trying to reduce greenhouse gases. Fortunately, the 2010 engines are expected to reduce emissions further and make gains in fuel economy. However, they are expected to cost $20,000 more than engines did at the start of this decade. So the industry is looking at every device and technology we can to lighten the load and improve fuel efficiency. But cash flow is tight. Even a good economy, the trucking industry's margins are around 1% to 2%. And right now, with freight down, it's much less than that. Plus, we have the credit crunch. And auxiliary power units typically cost between $1,500 and $10,000, making it hard for folks to pony up money for what, you know, is right now an elective equipment, which does have great gains to the environment. So we think this grant program could significantly change that dynamic. We are getting calls from members who have heard about this federal money. They would like for us to get some, but we do need to, the state to apply for these grants to make it a reality. So we are very appreciative of this legislation. Hope you will support it so we can do what we can to leverage these federal dollars to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions. Thank you.
What is the difference between this bill and Senator Dibble's Senate File 1956? Senator Ms. Baucus?
Mr. Chair, I think I will defer to Senator Dibble, but I believe that's for idling for Metro Transit fleets and not including the trucking industry.
Okay. Senator Dibble, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mine's not specifically for idling, but for hybrid bus or any other kind of technology for propulsion.
Okay. All right.
For buses.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator or Ms. Baucus, I'm not sure who would answer this, but stimulus money, we hear this term shovel ready. Are these auxiliary units available, and how much do they cost?
They are on the market right now, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen. They cost around $1,500 to $10,000. The $1,500 is for just a direct fire cab heater, and that only helps with heat in the wintertime. It wouldn't help when a trucker is, you know, running somewhere where it's very hot and they need air conditioning. So it would probably be an APU that's in the middle of the road there. It would cost around $5,000. This program is set up to provide half of the money available for the APU, which would greatly alleviate some of the cost. But, I mean, if the program were there, we know we have members who would be willing to apply. We did model this off a Wisconsin program, which was very successful. They had a waiting list. They couldn't keep up with the demand from truckers who were interested. So,
thank you.
Senator Fredrickson?
Ms. Baucus, I heard you say that it provides money for up to half the cost of putting up one of these devices.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the bill does it say that?
Ms. Baucus.
I do not have a copy of the Senate file before me, Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson. I just have the amendment. So I'm hoping if it's the same as the House file, which I have, on the original bill, Subdivision 2, the commissioner may award a grant to an eligible applicant for up to 50% of the purchase and installation.
Well, Chairman, I do
Senate
see
is
that
a little different, so line 1.17. Or 1.13, actually.
Council indicates that it's in there. It's in the
Chairman, I do see that now. And I also see on paragraph B that a fleet of trucks could only apply for one half of the number of vehicles that they have.
And then in Senator Dibble's bill, we just did some grammatical change to the your bill on your amendment, line 11 and 12, just to clean that up. Mr. Knopf, could you repeat that?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
the same intent is just grammatical.
It's basically you delete the agencies, delete application, insert the agency, and then delete the four, and then insert the agency receives, and then delete as required, and delete comma as successful.
Just makes it sound more statutory.
Chairman, I'd move the amendment.
Okay. Senator Fredrickson will move that. Senator Coring, Ms. Bogus, any problem?
Mr. Chairman, I guess if that, I don't think it really changes a whole lot, but it sounds fine to me.
All right. On the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Okay. Further discussion? Senator Dibble?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Coring's presentation was particularly eloquent. I'd like to move the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm certainly not as eloquent as my good friend, Senator Dibble. As they said in the city pages there, he's very eloquent. But I just try to stumble my way through. I'm hoping that
it was, it was poetic.
I'm Senator hoping Coring. The committee will pass this. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have this move on as a separate bill. I'm wondering, Senator Anderson, I don't know if she wants to see it.
We sent the previous Senator Dibble's bill to finance, and so I think that'll be appropriate for this as well.
Okay.
All right. So Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 1203, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion? Anyone want to testify against this bill? Anyone wants to testify against Senate File 1203? I don't see anyone approach. On the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr.
Coring.
Chairman.
As long as it doesn't cost me.
All right.
None of my bill. Kobe's bill, we got people
coming. Thanks. We do.
15 minutes left.
We've got about 10 minutes.
Huh? Kobe's in the evening. Senator Anderson's might be a little longer.
It's this year.
Senator Sharon here. Ah, would you like to take your bill? If you don't have your witness here, we can take Senator Sieben's bill. Okay, Senator Sieben. Are your witnesses here as well, Senator Sieben? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, Peter Cleary, who is from the Minnesota Naturalist Association, was planning on coming tonight, so he's not here. But
why don't we begin the testimony, and I'm certainly happy to pick it up again if we feel that the testimony is necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate File 1663 would appropriate money from the new Parks and Trail Fund to do three things. First, to create a Minnesota Naturalist Corps of young people or college-age people to provide naturalist services in our state parks. Second, it would appropriate money to fund 8 additional park naturalists. And third, it would appropriate money for self-directed information centers and kiosks on state parks. We all know here that we have a fantastic resource in our state park system, but visitors do not always have the skills or knowledge to fully utilize them. So park naturalists and interpreters, or an interpretation, would improve the park experience. So, and additionally, this bill would put people to work, which, of course, many of us around here have been talking about. More naturalists will improve environmental literacy among park visitors, and which is something that we all would like to promote here in Minnesota. And the House author worked with the DNRs to get the numbers regarding the Naturalist Corps of 30 members, as well as the correct appropriation number for the full-time naturalist and self-directed information. The DNR provided written information about wanting to increase summer naturalists from 18 to 30 members and having capacity at parks to fully utilize 8 additional full-time naturalists. So Judy Erickson from the Parks and Trails Council is here to offer additional support. But, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to just point out quickly that this bill is a little bit of a work in progress in that we have been having conversations with the House author, and I have been having conversations with the Minnesota Conservation Corps to see if some of these duties couldn't be undertaken by the Conservation Corps. And so we're working right now with the DNR to see if that could happen, and perhaps the appropriation amount then in the bill would could move down. So we could talk about that further if you like. The other exciting possibility about if the Conservation Corps could do this program is that they've indicated that they may be able to utilize AmeriCorps members to do some of this work, so that would be an additional way to, or that would be a way to leverage some federal funding for this, too. But now I'll turn it over to Ms. Erickson.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and thank you, Senator Steven, for doing this bill. This just want to add our support to the bill today. The naturalist programming is an important thing to the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota. It's a concern that we've had for a number of years is the loss of naturalist programming in our state parks. We have 72 state parks and recreation areas, and we have 12 full-time naturalists. And if we're looking at ways to connect people to the out-of-doors and to reconnect people and to bring young families out, we want to provide opportunities for them to understand what they're seeing. I think this bill really adds a lot of value to that. If you go out to a park and you want to understand what the significant geological feature is, say at Interstate State Park, which is near my home, and there's no one there to explain what the potholes are and how it came to be, you just kind of enjoy the beautiful scenery, but you don't really actually connect to the history of the area. And a naturalist program, adding full-time naturalists as well as adding additional internship opportunities really will add value to our for our park visitors. So we just want to lend our support to this bill. And it fits within the priorities that we have for the Park and Trail Legacy money.
Okay. Questions? Does the part about unemployment benefits and workers' compensation, does that need to be reviewed by other committees, or is that just kind of standard for this type of program? Do you have any thoughts, Mr. Knopf or Ms. Carlin?
Mr. Chairman, that may need to be Mr. Chairman, that may need to be referred to another committee to keep, you know, dealing with their status and how that's all going to be handled.
Okay. Okay. All right. Senator Steven?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Erickson just told me that it did not need to in the House, but we haven't had any other requests to hear the bill from committees. But
All right. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Steven, the appropriation is going to be out of the new dollars. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And is this ongoing? Is this going to be something that the parks is going to be able to take on from that day forward? I see you're hiring 8 new people with those funds, so those jobs certainly aren't going to just go away without additional funding in years out.
Senator Steven or Ms. Erickson?
Ms. Erickson wanted
to answer. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this builds on, this enhances existing activity that is currently not being funded. So it adds the new money. Well, we're adding. We're not substituting. We're not going to be cutting park naturalists, the 12 that are there, and replacing them with this. We're going to be adding on to it.
But you anticipate that the funding for this additional activity will be ongoing?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Steven?
As you can see on in Section 4 of the bill, the money would be for fiscal year 2010. But then it breaks down how that will be spent. Some of it would be for this pilot project for construction of 4 information centers. $200,000 would be for the information kiosks and $160,000 for 8 information kiosks. So I would imagine that we will have to again seek money in the future after
2010 and 2011.
So the, but the, okay, so the $760,000, that would presumably be one time, because you're creating a thing. And then the $640,000, that would be for full-time equivalent naturalists, and I presume once you get the program up and running, you wouldn't want to stop. So I'm presuming that at least that portion is ongoing. And then
that's everything, though. That's not just salary. Yeah, they would both be ongoing.
Mr. Chair, okay. Just to be clear, for Section 3, of course, we would want this to be ongoing, but you know, we're happy to talk about this in the Finance Division more. But my understanding, it was coming to this committee just to talk about the actual policy of establishing these, having these new park naturalists, but also the discussion that we had around the information that they would also be able to provide in our state.
I think it's a valid question for this committee, though, as a matter of policy, whether we want the amendment dollars, what amendment dollars should or shouldn't be ongoing. It's a fair question, at least. I don't know if I have an opinion on the answer to that, but I think it's a fair question. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yeah, and I agree with that, Mr. Chair. I'm sitting here trying to think of the, you know, $225 million request that we had on the Lasard Outdoor Council, which is similar money, whether we actually hired anybody, and there's going to be an ongoing cost there from year to year. So, you know, it's certainly something worth thinking about. That's all.
I do like the fact that this is not supplanting.
Yes. Yeah.
That's very good. Okay. Further discussion? And if some other committee kind of gets, you know, I'm not going to inform anyone, but if they notice about the benefits and workers' comp, that, you know, they may, in their some other committee's prerogative, to request it.
Mr. Chair, I'll check with other irrelevant.
Yeah. Maybe this is just boilerplate, but may want to just double check. So short of that, the bill needs to go to Finance. All right. Further discussion on Senate File 2926. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just reading the corner. I'm sorry. 1663. All right. Seeing none, Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 1663 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. It sounds like your other witness doesn't need to attend, at least tonight in this committee.
Oh, I'm happy to take the vote.
Yeah. All right. On the motion, anyone want to testify against the bill? Anyone want to testify in opposition? Not seeing anyone approaching. Okay. On the motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair.
We just have a moment.
Do we want
to pass out the so people can look at it? So what we're going to do is just pass out a proposed delete all amendment for the Game and Fish, Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. So members have a chance to look at it, fair chance to draft any amendments. And I'm not sure if we will be able to pass out the Game and Fish Bill tonight. It may spill over into tomorrow, but I do want to give folks fair notice about what I'm proposing to go into it. I think it pretty much has the provisions that we discussed, but take a look at it, and we can discuss a little bit more tonight, even without a vote, and go from there. So I think that's about all the time we're going to have. So by way of process, again, as I announced at the beginning, things are a little fluid with session, but it looks like we will come back here. We'll recess now, come back here about 6:30, maybe a little later, and then deal with the other bills. If we get to the Game and Fish bill, great. If not, we'll move into tomorrow. We were thinking about tomorrow morning, but it appears that a session is going to be, session will convene tomorrow morning, so we'll have to look for a time in the afternoon or maybe even the evening. So, that has not been determined yet. We ask that you just pay attention to when we'll be convening tomorrow, just to wrap up our deadline work. Any discussion questions? Staff is indicating if you could please put your papers in your folder, because we're going to have to wrap up, collect it all, and then distribute it back out tonight. So committee is in recess until 6:30 p.m.
If you don't have any witnesses against, I'm going to go find them.
I have to look and see if I'm supposed to be in this, if they're doing economic development in here right after.
Yeah, they can.
I know, me too. Mm-hmm.